future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Welcome, welcome. It is, a little frog in my throat. Welcome to Raging Chickens, Out to Coop Live. Yes, it is our call-in show for Monday, April 19th, 2021. Man, mid-April. It seems like it's kind of racing through April here. On Out to Coop Live, we talk to progressives, activists, and troublemakers of all sorts, right from our own backyards or from across the country. On Fridays, Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. And you can get both podcasts by subscribing on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. But you can only join the call-in show, the live show, Monday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Want to remind everybody, too, if you are listening on Podbean, you can always jump on over into our YouTube channel, too, as well. Just look up at Raging Chicken or Raging Chicken Media and make sure you subscribe to that YouTube channel. Make sure that you hit the like button for this stream and hit that little notification bell so that you know every single time that we go live. And we had some big news like last week or whatever. I mean, again, big little news, I guess. We crossed the 100 subscriber mark on our YouTube channel. We haven't been on doing the YouTube channel consistently for all that long, so I was totally psyched once we hit the 100 mark, and so now we want to kind of double that kind of in the days ahead if we can. We're very much looking forward to it. And you can also help support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month by just going on to patreon.com/rcpress. And if you are listening to this show live on the Podbean app, you can show us some love right now. You can just drop a few bucks in our tip jar by clicking on that little gift icon at the bottom of your screen. You can fill your digital pockets with Podbean's golden beans and send us a gift of your choice. Every gift that you send help support and expand this podcast. And I gotta say, I don't want to kind of like get out over my skis, so to speak, but had some great conversations earlier on the day with some folks, and we're gonna be bringing you a third chapter or a third stream, if you will, to the podcast coming at the kind of mid-May. I don't want to get out too in front of it, but I'm very excited about it. And had some great organizational questions with some folks. One guy in particular, about some possibilities moving forward with Raging Chicken. So I'm really, really excited about how we can expand this podcast and then also expand some of the writing on RagingChickenPress.org. So I'm very, very excited about that. If you're looking for more PA Progressive Talk, you want to tune into the Rick Smith Show's live stream at 7 p.m. Eastern on his YouTube channel, Twitter, Facebook, wherever you can stream, Rick is there Monday through Friday. You can also head on over to thericksmithshow.com for all his latest across all his platforms. He's got the awesome Free Speech TV show on Saturdays at 7 p.m. Fantastic. And you must, this is an order. Not that I have any control over anybody out there, but you must go check out the newly launched Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. It's fantastic. You can find it on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast. Episode 2 dropped last week, featuring the one and only State Senator Katie Muth. It was great. The amazing PA women stirring the cauldron behind this podcast rock the house, and they know where the bodies are buried. Spooky, right? Yes. Make sure you follow them on Twitter at the Night Caucus. That's at the Night Caucus on Twitter. And for all you gamers out there, check out The Game Inn for all your gaming needs. The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show and actually like friends of the family, my son's best friends. That's their parents who run it. They're friends of the show and have almost every gaming product you can imagine. Retro N64s, Nintendo DSs, PS4s, Switches, and the games to go with them. Huge selection of collectibles, action figures, and Funko Pops. Like literally like walls of Funko Pops in there. And you can follow, and make sure you have any questions, you know, make sure you check them out on their Facebook page. Look at The Game Inn, that's Gaming with Two N's. If you got a kid and they get an A on the report card, they get a discount. I mean, come on, you can't go wrong. Follow them at Twitter at The Game Inn, that's with two N's, at The Game Inn. If you got a question about a game, looking for something hard to get, just message them on Facebook, drop them an email at thegameinnpa@gmail.com, or give them a call at 267-424-2535. Check them out online at The Game Inn, thegameinnwithtwons.com. And a special shout out to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at @SongADayMan. Once again, with two N's, @SongADayMan. That is Jonathan Mann. On today's show, I'm very excited once again. I've been excited. I'm telling you, the past several weeks, I've just been psyched for every single show. Today's show, I'm especially excited, one, because of what we're going to be talking about, but two, because I get to talk to an old friend who's been on the show before. I welcome back to the program, Karen Faradin. Karen is the founder of Burke's Gas Tree. That is a grassroots community organization fighting to ban fracking and all shale gas infrastructure. She is the co-founder of the statewide Better Path Coalition. And for the past 11 years, she has worked with organizations in PA, New York, New Jersey, and Delaware to win the ban on fracking in the Delaware River Basin that was just imposed in February. It's a huge win. She's currently part of an international coalition working to stop liquefied natural gas or LNG exports, and the national coalition working with members of Congress to reform the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC. So we're going to be talking about the Better Path Coalition's We Are the Ones campaign. We're going to be talking about the fight, where is the fight right now, kind of on fracking. And we're going to look at, you know, what the coalition's, the Better Path Coalition's campaign, and what they hope to do by building on the recent decision to ban fracking in the Delaware River Basin, the release of Christina Marusix, who, you know, we've had her on the show, the release of her bombshell report for Environmental Health News called Fractured, the Body Burden of, burden of Living Near Fracking. And, you know, how do we keep on pressuring the Wolf administration and his support of fracking and the fossil fuel industry once and for all? Karen, welcome back to the show.
Kevin, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be back. It's been too long.
It has been way too long. I mean, you know, you and I, we used to bump into each other fairly regularly before COVID, you know?
Yeah. I know. It's just so depressing, but it's nice to be back and feeling like part of the world again a little bit.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. You know, things are just about getting loosened up. I had my second shot of the vaccine last week. It felt like a huge milestone. It's still, you know, I'm still teaching all online and things like this. I know people are like slowly moving forward. It scares me that we're seeing another little spike in COVID, but I could feel like, you know, getting back to like whatever this new world order is going to look like is going to happen soon.
Yeah, I think it remains to be seen, but I'm 2 weeks and a couple of days out from my second vaccine. So I think I'm as good to go as I'm going to be, and I'm still being careful, but, you know, it's still nice to feel like we're getting closer to something that resembles normal.
I hear you. You know, I hear you. And, you know, it's also nice to be back in into a regime. I mean, I'm not saying it's a perfect regime, but in a regime that has some degree of respect for science. it seems to be a better place, especially when we're talking about like the catastrophic, like, you know, threat of climate change that is staring us in the face. I mean, so that's at least a step forward too, as well, I would say.
I would say so. I mean, I still think we have to worry a little bit about climate denial, Democrat style, but, you know, we can talk about that if you like.
We're going to talk about that, absolutely. So before we jump into, like, both the kind of what is happening, before we look at, you know, the We Are the Ones campaign, I definitely want to get to that. You had an action in the Capitol today, and where we go from here. Why don't we start by just kind of giving us a kind of where we are now moment? Because, you know, I think, like I was kind of alluding to there, I mean, the shift with the Biden administration, it's definitely, you know, like, I don't want to say night and day, but I said it's been a pretty much of a serious sea change away from the constant, like, you know, nonsense flooding the airways every single day about Twitter and tweets and assaults on, like, people's character and all that. And so now we have at least an opportunity to get back to actually, you know, some of the real problems at hand. And by saying that, I don't mean to say that now everything's hunky-dory and it's all grand, but I mean, like what you said, you know, climate denial, Democrat style. But why don't we start with just kind of give us a lay of the land. Where are we right now here in Pennsylvania? And talk about some of the victories that we're having, some of the problems that are still out there, or just a lay of the landscape as you see it.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really good place to start because, you know, you just mentioned the Biden administration and their embrace of science, which is a great thing. And I think, you know, if you look at how the pandemic is being managed and how they're getting ahead of their own targets about getting people vaccinated, you know, I think they understand and respect science. The challenge I always find when we translate that kind of interest in science to other issues like the ones that I fight, fracking and climate change, is that it's a little bit too easy to start hiding behind the science for some of our politicians. And I've seen this very often in the Democratic Party, where there's a lot of emphasis given to the transition away from fossil fuels and that clean energy future that we talk about. But it's not just about the consumption side, and that's where a lot of the energy is focused.
Yes.
And so there's lots of stuff about, you know, how we're going to rely on different sources of energy and how we can envision that, while ignoring the fact that we are still producing fossil fuels. And in the case of fracking, that happens to be where a lot of the damage is done, because of the amount of methane that is released when fracking is, you know, being done, you know, in the shale fields of Pennsylvania and so many other places in this country and around the world. So, you know, so it's not.
Karen? Do we lose you, Karen? Looks like, Karen, we can't hear you right now. Oh, we got you back.
Can you hear me now?
Yep, got you back.
Oh, okay.
That was
I'm not sure what happened.
Yeah, just...
but what did you hear me say?
So we're talking about, say, the Biden administration. We talk about a little bit difficult with Democrats when they kind of support of science, but we focus on the consumption part, but not on the production part. And fracking is where a lot of that kind of actually happens. That's
okay,
roughly where we were.
Say much more. I didn't really say much more than that, that in fracking, my point was that on the production side, methane is released, and that's a big contributor to climate change. And so to not think about that part, kind of push that to the side and actually continue to support it, is a problem.
Absolutely. And I'm, you know, what's interesting I find right now is that there was a piece, I don't know if you saw this, came out in Bloomberg News today, about how is natural gas the new coal? Right. Basically, you know, even talking about how with natural gas, you know, even natural gas, the cost of production and the subsidy of that and the amount of fossil fuels that are being pumped into the atmosphere right now, just from, as you're saying, in the production, really necessitates that we focus on that end of things. And, you know, again, and I mean, and you know this as well as I do, in Naomi Klein's book, you know, when she's talking about basically saying, you know, this whole idea about we're going to focus on consumption and changing our light bulbs and have electric cars, that's really kind of, you know, doing good around the edges. What really mm-hmm. we need to do is we need to shut off the pipes.
That's right. The Annie Leonard from Greenpeace uses an analogy with somebody she co-authored a piece on, so I apologize, I don't recall his name. But the analogy that she used was the bathtub that's overflowing. What's the first thing that you do when the tub is overflowing? Do you reach for a towel or do you turn off the tap? And so, you know, we need to actually turn off the tap. That's where we have to start. And as Naomi Klein says, it requires system change. It's not enough to just, you know, use LED light bulbs or something like that. You know, we have big, big problems in the way that we're approaching this industry as a whole, not just because we're, you know, doing the damage that we're going to have to live with forever and we're going to have all the legacy issues to deal with. But we're also continuing to approve, you know, any sort of pipeline or power plant or anything that gets proposed. And what happens then is that if we are smart enough to get off of fossil fuels as quickly as we need to, we're just going to have a lot of stranded assets. So there's a whole lot of investment going into the wrong places.
And it seems to me like, you know, right now we've seen about this is one of the things that we saw also, you know, reports that have come out from the Ohio River Valley Institute. We had Sean O'Leary on the show kind of not too long ago, was talking about how, you know, all the promise even of economic development, which is what, you know, which lured a lot of these areas, right, in our state and in West Virginia, the Ohio River Valley, to basically welcome the frackers in, was that promise of economic development. And that hasn't even panned out. So it seems right now, in the midst of like what we have with COVID, what we have with the kind of the lack of economic development and the real need to have, you know, I mean, we need to do like a 180, right, or maybe just get off the train entirely and start a new track kind of thing. And to really kind of sink in investment. And it seems that like now's the time. Those people who are most hurting very often are in these same communities that have been hurt, damaged most by the fracking industry, to invest in renewables, to invest in that kind of, you know, that post-carbon future.
Yeah. I mean, you just mentioned in the intro and just now talking about the Ohio River Valley Institute report, two of my favorite things, you know, what Christina Marusik did, and this new report that talks about the economics of it all and how things haven't really lived up to expectations. And, you know, we've been saying for a long time that, the fracking industry has never really been profitable. And so, you know, so it's sort of a house of cards anyhow. But, you know, it is very localized now, where those communities that really did put a lot of hope into being able to improve, or individual landowners were being, you know, I think they were going to be making a lot of money. I mean, there's been so much disappointment. And as you correctly pointed out, it's happening in a place that has been hit over and over and over by one extractive technology after another. And so, you know, it's like, how much more are these communities supposed to be able to take? So there are profound on the ground impacts happening right now. And then, of course, climate change is, you know, just the next nightmare. And the on the ground conditions are making people even more vulnerable. I'll give just one really quick example.
Please.
The industry is sort of turning into its own victim. It was a couple years ago now that the Revolution pipeline blew up in Beaver County, Pennsylvania. And it, you know, ended up destroying a home. I mean, a house just completely blew up, but then there were others that were destroyed or, you know, made uninhabitable, you know, vehicles that were lost, a traumatized community, of course. And all of it happened 1 week after that pipeline went online. And so it's a brand new pipeline built to, you know, the latest, you know, best practices and the latest regulations and all of that. Why did it blow up? Well, it's energy transfer. That's one of the answers. Energy transfer is just a disaster of a company. But you know, in addition, it happened because of their shoddy practices building the thing on a steep slope. And one of the problems with building it on a steep slope in the wrong way was that as soon as there was a deluge, which they are having now, these like rain bombs because of climate change, we're seeing these intense kind of rainstorms. We're seeing a whole lot more, you know, shifting of the earth and subsidence and that sort of thing, so that sinkholes can develop and things can just collapse. Well, when you have a brand new pipeline in the ground, you know, it's collapsing, you know, the ground around it is making the thing unstable. It explodes. And so in a weird way, the pipeline is the victim of its own contents, really, because what's in it is the stuff that's exacerbating climate change in the first place. We wouldn't be having the rain bombs that caused the thing to fail if pipelines weren't carrying all of that product that's making things worse. Now, it's obviously not the only contributor, but it's a big one. It's a big one we have a lot of control over in Pennsylvania, because that's a big, big industry for us in this state, between methane and ethane, which is the other new chapter or newer chapter in this story. Increasingly, fracking isn't being done for natural gas. It's not an energy source. It's being done to produce plastics.
Right. Well, and it also seems like, you know, with that huge amount of investment that, you know, and in the ethane cracker plant, right, kind of out in western Pennsylvania, you know, is perfect example of what you're talking about. And the kind of like, you know, I mean, the amount of money that went into that, developing that just as a way of supporting, you know, because it really was, right? The plant was there to support the natural gas industry, right? It wasn't really even about delivering energy. It was about delivering the, you know, the product of ethane for plastics. And, you know, I mean, plastics, and, you know, I've got students doing research on like the microplastic kind of dilemma and problems and all that's the problems that it's causing our health right across the board as it is. So it's like, okay, just adding insult to injury and helping kind of like giving these kind of subsidies to that industry.
Yeah. I mean, if there's an industry or a subject, I should say, in the environmental realm that is in any way in competition with climate change and just how big an issue that is, it's plastics. So what's Pennsylvania do? It, you know, continues to produce methane for natural gas, which is, you know, 86 times more powerful than the carbon dioxide molecule that hits the atmosphere. So it's a very, very powerful greenhouse gas. So we go all in on that. And then when it's time to go all in on something else, we go all in on plastics. So we are, you know, going headlong into these industries. We're hitching our wagon to dying stars. Why we would do that, I don't understand, but that's what we're doing in Pennsylvania.
Indeed. So let me say, you know, before, because there's a lot of challenges here, but at the same time, right, I mean, the fact that there's a fracking ban in the Delaware River Basin, that seemed to be like a sea change. I mean, that was huge. And not like right on the heels of that, you get that report from the Ohio River Valley Institute about the lack of economic development, the lack of the economic promise from these industry. Then you get Christina Marusik's kind of series that comes out looking at the ways that, you know, people's bodies are being polluted, right, and decimated for generations just by living near these industries. There does seem to be I hate to say good news, right? But I mean, it seems to be there's some momentum or at least a spotlight focused on the fracking industries and its perils in a way that I can't recall having at the same time before. I mean, so give us a sense, where do you see things are at this moment? Do you see that too as well? Or do you see the challenges still kind of are just way too big?
Well, no, I actually think that what happened with the Delaware River Basin Commission's decision to ban fracking is a sea change. I think it's huge. I don't think we understand yet how huge a deal it is, really, because not only have we been fighting for that for 11 years and now we've gotten it, but there are a couple other things that are significant about it. One is that what they were supposed to do that day was to vote to ban fracking, which they had told us they were intending to do as early as 2017. And so that was known to us that was their intention. Mm-hmm. But what they were supposed to do at the same time, and this is what they announced when they announced their intention to ban fracking, was that they had developed these regulations that they were going to vote on. One that would allow clean water to be removed from the basin so that fracking could be done elsewhere. So they were going to send clean water so that, you know, fracking can be done, you know, someplace else like in Ohio or someplace nearby. And the problem is that there is an obscene, it was always obscene, but it, right, an unbelievable amount of water that's being used in the process now. And so that's something the industry really needed. They needed more water. The other thing they need desperately is some place to put their waste. And so the other regulation that they were going to vote on in February was one that would have allowed waste to be imported, wastewater, into the river basin, where we would then be the ones having to transport it, dispose of it, process it, store it, whatever needed to be done would be done here in the basin. Again, facilitating lots of fracking going on elsewhere, giving the industry the other thing that it needs desperately, and endangering our watershed at the same time. And so what was really significant to me about what happened on February 25th is that they withdrew those things from consideration, and it was only about the ban on fracking. And they announced that they're going to be re-reviewing. They had already gone through the entire review. They had already accepted all the public comments on those regulations, but there was so much pushback that they are just probably reversing themselves. That's what we're hoping they're doing. They sounded very much like their intention now is to go through the review with an intention to ban those practices too. And that's what we started calling for the minute we heard that they were going to approve those things, or at least they were going to vote one way or the other on them. We wanted them to ban all of it, ban all of these fracking-related activities. And so we shifted our message from ban fracking in the basin to full ban on fracking in the basin. Don't just ban fracking, but then let all these other things happen. And so so that's the very significant thing about what happened that day. They couldn't ban it that day. All they would have been able to do is just vote yes or no on the mm-hmm. regulation. So the fact that they stopped their own process and announced that they're going to be doing this thing that will be out, I believe, in September.
Karen, we lost you again. Are you still there? Karen, you cut out again. Can you hear me? Karen, are you hearing me? We'll see if we get Karen back in a second. She's still connected here. See, I had that happen once before. That's a bit odd. She's cutting out. Karen, are you still hearing me?
Can you hear me now?
Now I gotcha. Yep.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay. I'm not sure why this is happening. I can hear you.
Okay, good, good.
I've been able to hear you all along.
Yeah, I'm sure it's it's the gremlins in the machine. I mean, that's all it is. You got it, you got the whoever does the monitoring these days has to hit the kind of a change the old cassette tape every once in a while. You know what I'm saying? So you were basically saying, you're just about to say in September.
Mm-hmm. So in September is when they're going to be putting out whatever they have done to re-review these regulations. And we're very hopeful that what they're going to be doing is, again, deciding to ban those practices too. and listening to what people have said when they've said we want a full ban on fracking. So that's the really significant part. That was what was so especially exciting about what happened on February 25th. But of course, it's really exciting to win a battle that you've been fighting for 11 years. That was that was pretty big. But it also created opportunities as far as, I mean, you could be depressed about it because there's still fracking going on everywhere else, and it is depressing that fracking is going on everywhere else, and it's very depressing that our governor is so supportive of that fracking. But, you know, if you want to look at glass half full, it provides us the opportunities to specifically call him out on his hypocrisy, because he not only voted for that ban, but he seconded the vote.
Right.
He had his representative do that, and that's the head of the DEP. So, you know, and so, you know, so they were very enthusiastic about banning fracking. They looked to all of the science, they said, this is in their actual, you know, the resolution itself explains that they looked at the science and they looked at the adverse effects that were happening on the ground over time, over the entire time it's been happening. And they said that the industry was, you know, working best practices and that the regulators were on it. So with all these good things happening, coming from the industry and the regulators, it's still not enough. It's still dangerous. And so it was too much for us to bear a day of in the Delaware River Basin, but it was not sufficient, you know, sufficiently dangerous for Governor Wolf to say, you know, this is a wake-up call all the way around. It's time to start banning it everywhere else, too.
Well, quite right, and I think this is absolutely fascinating, because it's almost like you're playing like the eastern part of the state against the western part of the state, or however you want to kind of like play that, in terms of how are you breaking up kind of, you know, the political calculation, because I really think that's all that it is. It's a political calculation, God knows what, but that pits like east against west. Like, the idea, it is not politically viable to kind of continue with support for fracking in the east, but it is in the western part of the state, which is just bizarre. But let me ask you this before, because I want to talk then get to specifically to Wolf and the campaign that, you know, again, today's action in the Capitol that you were part of. But do you have a sense, before we get there, do you have a sense of what is it about now? Like, what has shifted, or why are we at a place now where suddenly you see, you know, the commission moving forward and making these bold moves? What's going on there?
Well, and this is one of the parts, and I could go on about how frustrating it is. But, you know, like I said, they did announce their intention in 2017. Now, I don't know what was going on at the DRBC and amongst the commissioners. But of course, at the time when they made their announcement, there were three Democratic commissioners. And then Christie left and Phil Murphy came in New Jersey. So now there were four Democratic governors. The commission is only a five-member commission. The only other person there is the President of the United States, always represented by the Army Corps of Engineers, but they take their direction from what the you know, what the President wants them to do. And so I don't know what was going on during the Trump administration, if one vote, you know, somebody representing one vote on that commission was enough to dictate what the commission felt comfortable doing with four Democratic governors who could have outvoted him on anything. So I don't know if that had anything to do with the timing, but it is significant that they did this thing as soon as Biden took over. He didn't vote for it. He abstained because they hadn't had enough time to work out between the Army Corps and the President's office how they should vote. They hadn't discussed that yet. At least it wasn't a no vote. But, you know, the same vote they would have gotten among the governors as long as Phil Murphy was around, and they would still have a majority prior to that, you know, it would have still been the way the vote had gone. It was in many ways identical. So I don't know what the additional pressure was, but it is significant to me that this is when they decided to do it. So so maybe they were just waiting for their moment, their opportunity. But at the same time, a lot of on-the-ground impacts have occurred since 2017. And so when they say that they looked at the science, when there was half the science there is now, and when they looked at the on-the-ground impacts, which, again, have just multiplied since 2017, well, then, you know, how can Governor Wolf, the only governor, the only member of the commission who has constituents who are the ones that they were looking at, how can he justify not just allowing it to continue in the rest of the state if it's, you know, if they thought it was too bad in 2017, have a look at what's happening today, you know. So if it's too bad for, you know, for us, why isn't it too bad for the other parts of the state now, to the extent that Governor Wolf is pushing his back to work PA plan, which is this year's iteration of his severance tax plan. And that means that what he's looking for is a way to do a pandemic workforce recovery program of different kinds of things that, you know, would be funding through legislation to the tune of like $3 billion that would have to be paid off ultimately with a 20-year severance tax or extraction tax on drilling. And so, you know, that means not just another couple of years or, you know, increasing concern and maybe we should start the drawdown, but no, let's do lots of fracking for the next 20 years in all those parts of the state that they looked at. Matt, I don't understand.
Well, that's one of the things when you know, you and I were back and forth like early on, we were talking about coming on the show and stuff. That's one of the things that you had said to me is like, this is like, you know, doubling down on a commitment to some of the worst, you know, the worst polluting, you know, industries like got around for 20 years, like you said, or, you know, and basically put people in a situation like, okay, either you keep, you know, smoking the pipe, so to speak, right? And keep your addiction to fossil fuels and keep on supporting these frackers, or you're going to have to face kind of like, you know, potential, say, bankruptcies or cuts in social services and stuff. So this seems like a devil's bargain, right? I mean, it always seemed to be like a devil's bargain when we were promised the severance tax, we want the severance tax to pay for education. So that was like, okay, so you're going to basically say if your kids, you want your kids to be educated, that you're going to have to support this industry. We see what's happened in other states where they've made that bargain, right? And yet here we see it once again. So, I mean, yeah. I'm with you. I think we're at the point now we have to have that pressure on kind of on Governor Wolf now. And that's precisely kind of what, you know, the Better Path Coalition has been kind of working for right now, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, in a way, we've gotten more specifics out of the governor in this past go-round than we've ever gotten before, because in years past, when he was always trying to connect the severance tax to the budget process, it was kind of open-ended. And I'm pretty sure that 2 years, well, now it's 3 years ago, he kind of didn't do too much on the severance tax last year because of the pandemic. But
right.
2019 was the first time he introduced one of those bills, you know, the idea of doing, in that time, it was an infrastructure bill called Restore Pennsylvania. And I think the strategy was that Republicans were going to find it a lot more palatable to have all sorts of, you know, numbers put to things so that it wasn't so open-ended, like it was going to be over in 4 years and it was only going to, you know, cost this much money. Nobody was going to be able to spend beyond X number of dollars on various programs and blah, blah, blah. It was very finite, you know, in a way that might appeal to Republicans and very sort of fixed. And so it was the first time that he had to start putting numbers on the severance tax. And that's when, you know, we'd been saying,
oh, we lost you again. You just cut out again. All right, so we've been here before, everybody. We've happened twice before. So we know Karen is coming back. We're going to be able to hear her in just a minute here. Why don't I take this as an opportunity to kind of recall, because I want to talk about the actions that the Better Path Coalition took place today in the Harrisburg in Pennsylvania State Capitol. It was called the We Are the Ones campaign, which Karen was part of. But I'll take this as an opportunity to kind of remind you to say you can help support this show. You can become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. You can just go to patreon.com/rcpress, or if you're listening on a Podbean right during the show, you can kind of send us some love right now and hit that gift icon at the bottom of your screen. Send us a virtual cup of coffee, love balloon, roses. They got all little different things you can send. Just get yourself some golden beans and send the love, the gifts that you send to help support and expand this podcast. So I think we got Karen back. You're back again, Karen? Karen, are you there?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, now I got you again. We lost
you. Can you hear me?
Yep. Can you hear me? I can hear you.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, we lost you again. So I just gave a little break and kind of like an intro to the show. Remind everybody to head on over to YouTube too as well. If you are not already, or if you're listening to us on YouTube, make sure you hit that subscribe button and like this stream and hit that little bell that you get a notification of every time that we go live. So Karen, we were just starting to talk about you know, Governor Wolf has gotten, you got more specifics out of him that you have kind of in a long time, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you got to have an opportunity here. Like you're saying, we got the Delaware River Valley Commission to kind of ban fracking in there. We have these kind of reports that are coming out. I forgot to mention at the top of the show, in 2 weeks, we're having the directors of the film Invisible Hand come on the show. And so we're going to be talking to, in 2 weeks, we're going to be talking to Melissa Troutman and Joshua Probanek about the Rights of Nature documentary that follows up on our discussion from with Chad Nicholson from CELDEF, who talking about the rights of nature and the fight in Grand Township. So it seems like there's these kind of, you know, not necessarily coordinated things, but, you know, with these reports that are coming out, with this banning on here, it seems like a perfect time to, okay, let's double down and say there's some pressure on Governor Wolf.
Well, that's right. And I was saying about how he's being more specific. So he's finally put numbers to the severance tax, 20 years, as we had, like I said, right when I was cut off, probably about, you know, how we've always been saying that, you know, that it would institutionalize fracking, and then he kind of proved it. But, and then, of course, by supporting the ban on fracking, he's actually had to say fracking is too dangerous. And there's something else that didn't come up yet, but this is something that we were involved in 2019, when the stories came out in Western Pennsylvania about a spike in rare cancers in young people.
Mm-hmm.
We really started pushing on the administration to do something about it. At first, he was hiding behind this terrible academic, this not even academic, but it was something that the Department of Health had done with their colleagues in Colorado, where they cherry-picked 25 studies and then said they don't even think there are any sort of impacts, you know, health impacts of fracking at all. First, they tried to hide behind that. But then we took families. We were working with a group called the Center for Coalfield Justice and Physicians for Social Responsibility, who's also a member of the Better Path Coalition. But the three of our groups worked together to take families to Harrisburg. If Governor Wolf won't ever go to them, he never has. Let's take the families to Harrisburg. And they did a legislative briefing at lunchtime, and then they did a press event in front of his office. And for the first time, he came out and addressed the families for the first time in all the years that he's been governor. And so that was on November 18th, 2019. On November 22nd, he called for studies for the first time. Nothing has ever been studied in this state. So he called for studies. Now, studies doesn't get us very far, because studies gives them the opportunity to say, well, there's, definite link made, or whatever they're going to say. You know, it gives them a bit of an out. And of course, studies take forever. But it was the first time he had to admit that he didn't know if fracking was safe. It's, such an factor for him that he needs to study it. That's the first time he's made any kind of admission. And so we keep inching closer and closer with all of these things to say, how can you, again, justify taking these very drastically different positions,
right,
when, you think fracking is unsafe enough that you need to study it. It's maybe impacting people's health in a very profound way. Now it's unsafe in all these other ways that you and the commission looked at when you decided to ban it in the Delaware. I mean, you're getting closer, but why are you still supporting so much more fracking? And so it's our moment to take advantage of that and really call them on it.
Fantastic. Well, that brings us to the We Are the Ones campaign. Let's talk a little about the We Are the Ones campaign, because you were there in the state capitol today. I saw the images on Twitter of this like ginormous petition being kind of unrolled in the floor of the capitol. I would even say petition, right? Because it wasn't just a petition. It was a kind of a unique kind of sign-on as a way of kind of garnering the kind of pressure that you're talking about.
Yeah, after the ban on fracking, and given the fact that they did look to other people in Pennsylvania and everywhere else, but, those data points in the studies they look at are people. They're Pennsylvanians and many others. But, Wolf is looking at his own constituents, that they've already said dangers are being experienced by Pennsylvanians. So in many ways, he was looking at his own constituents. And so after that happened, and it was clear that he's continuing to be supportive of fracking everywhere else, but just not the Delaware, we knew we had to write a letter, because we are a frontline and grassroots-led coalition and a statewide coalition. So, even though, I live in the Delaware River Basin, a lot of the other members do not.
Right.
And so I stand in solidarity with them personally. But, we thought we needed to write a letter calling him out on again, the hypocrisy I keep mentioning. And so we decided to do this letter. I started writing it actually just to do a conventional letter, and I found myself writing a really unorthodox letter that almost read like a poem. And so I took it back to the group. I'm like, I don't know if this is too weird. But then they liked it, and they started adding to the poem, and it became this collaboration. And so it ended up being this letter. We keep using the phrase, "We are the ones." Mm-hmm. So that's all these references to that throughout the show. That's what it's about. We are the ones, written from the perspective, in other words, of all those people that he was looking at without maybe even wanting to admit it. And so, you know, it's like, we are the ones you have abandoned. You know, we are the ones that we've repeatedly asked you to meet with us, and you've never found the time for us. And all these lines, you know, that kind of tell the story of these people's lives everywhere else in the state, but in the Delaware River Basin, which was a tactic at one point in New York State. So I don't know if you were talking about that earlier, if strategically, if they can get all of the activists in the East to turn their backs on the people in the West, well, maybe that's how they win or something. But, you know, so for us, you know, I mean, showing of solidarity is as important as having a personal story about how you've been impacted. And so that's what we ask people to do. You know, tell us your story when you sign on. Give us a little, you know, snippet about what's going on in your lives, how you've been impacted, what's going on around you. And then if you're not from, you know, one of the directly impacted areas, sign on in solidarity. And so we got about 1,000 Pennsylvanians, over 1,000, but many, many of them told their stories. And we also have some videos that people did. And so we're starting to collect all these stories. We're going to continue to do that. But, you know, the idea is to just show that not only how many people are signing on, how many people are willing to tell their stories, but how widespread the damage is and how many people from different parts of the state have pretty much the same story of contaminated water or air quality that's horrible. So that, you know, I think that was one of the things that was compelling about the movie Gasland when it came out.
Yes.
That wherever Josh Fox went, he encountered the same problems. And I think that's one of the things people need to understand. It's not some isolated problem in one community. Community after community is experiencing the same thing. And so it's a thing. It's something to be worried about. And it's affecting a whole lot of people in the northern tier and in the western part of the state. And so it's time for this to stop. And this is, you know, this is our moment when we are just not taking it anymore. The Better Path Coalition turned 3 years old on Tuesday. We opened with a statement rather than an ask, which was, "We choose a better path, Governor Wolf." Today, we delivered another statement.
Well, I mean, I think that's great. So I think there's a couple things that I think really impactful about the medium and the way that you kind of chose to frame all this. Like, I think that these stories are really, really important. You and I, we talked a little bit about this before the show, is that, you know, Christina Marusik's piece, her fracture thing, but the stories that she told, they tore me up, right? Because you're talking about, you know, real people. And I think this is one of the problems that, you know, those of us who've been kind of, I don't want to frame it in terms of problems, but I think that, you know, because the policy and the research parts of these movements, right, are so important, and that information needs to get down. We have to be arguing policy. We have to be arguing in terms of, you know, this proposal, that's absolutely essential. But, you know, the history of social movements has always been that is, you know, yes, there's the policy, but it's people that end up moving things, right? And it's their stories. And, you know, I teach this one class, for example, called New Media Story Change, where we look at the role of storytelling. And part of it is actually looking at that history of story, of storytelling and individual people's stories as being one of the kind of key motors of change. So to see those stories be coming in just by kind of everyday people who's, you know, they're impacted in terms of their health, in terms of their water quality, in terms of just like turning a quiet country road into like a major highway for truck traffic. You know, these things like fundamentally alter people's lives. And for those stories to begin to build, they're much more difficult, I think, for a politician like Tom Wolf or any like politician that is like half a human, right? To turn away from that. So I think that's a really important move, that we begin kind of like, again, reinforcing all the research that's already there with the stories of people and their struggles and why it's necessary to make these changes.
Well, yeah. And in fact, if you look at the history of the environmental justice movement, which is, you know, what this is all about.
Exactly.
Is, I think there was a fair amount of frustration, because I think a lot of the big greens that frustrated the environmental justice movement that began was really out of the civil rights movement. I think there was a lot of I don't know if I would say it was criticism, but definitely it was clearly that something was missing when too many of the big green organizations were so detached. So we rely on science, we embrace science, but you have to know when to not talk about science. It can't always be about reports and things like that, as important as they are, as much as I glom onto every one of them and comes out because there's so much good information. At some point, the thing that persuades people, the thing that's really important to hear are the stories. And I think that was the real value that the civil rights movement brought to, the environmental movement, because it was really not, it was a very detached sort of world of people in offices in some other place, not on the ground. It was really the birth of the grassroots environmental movement. And that's where the stories are. You have to hear from the people. In fact, Lois Bjornsson, who's one who gives tours for us, she does them all the time, but Better Path partnered with her to get legislators to go out and take a tour of southwestern Pennsylvania. They've never been there, a lot of them. And so now they're seeing it for the first time. The thing that they've been legislating about was something they never saw with their own eyes. And you don't go see it and then come away unchanged. And so, but Lois was also one of Christina's subjects in her report on body burden. And so when she signed the letter, she just put the link to the body burning study. She didn't even bother telling her story.
You want my story? Here you go.
Yeah, read it. He's probably reading this, Governor Wolf. Yeah. Because her family is one of those ones where they're just testing in the 95th percentile on these horrible things. It was her son who was helping her and his dad with the vinyl flooring. But, he's also the one who, again, showed up, I think, in the 91st percentile for something related to ethyl benzene or something terrible. It's just ridiculous what's going on. And it's happening everywhere. It's happening everywhere. And it's just got to stop.
Well, awesome. So, as we kind of I'm very, very excited to see that. And I do think there's a whole lot of energy, because also, you talk about a whole new generation of activists, which I want to talk about where we go from here, but a whole new generation of activists. You look at the Sunrise Movement. You look at, I could go on and on. You look at the kind of the school strikers. It seems to me that we are on the precipice of kind of some major fundamental change. Which is got me kind of really excited. So before we talk about where we're going to go here, just want to remind everybody, we're kind of getting towards the latter part of the show. So if anybody's got comments, you've got questions, if you want to call in, if you're listening to us on the Podbean app right now, you can hit the little call in button. If you got a question or comment or want to contribute to there, you're welcome to call in. You can leave a comment on our YouTube. Karen, you've already got a fan. Cyril has said, Karen rocks, great guest. So just
thank you.
So there you go. So we're happy to see it. But yeah, if you like to, any kind of comments, you get, if you don't want to call in, that's fine. You're on Podbean. You can always throw a message in the chat. I'll be happy to kind of read it or ask Karen the question for you. Same thing with the YouTube. As we're going to see, if anybody wants to come in, please do. But as we're kind of looking forward about where we go from here, there really is, a new generation of activists, kind of young folks who basically, never lived in the world where they had to denaturalize or unmask the lies about fossil fuels, right? They were born into the climate crisis. And I think that, there's something to be said of that. I remember one of the things that Naomi Klein wrote back, I'm a huge fan of Naomi Klein, I say, but she wrote back in No Logo, which came out in 2000. And one of the things that she said is that one of the things that she was talking about specifically about corporate America at that point, but they're going to have to contend with, is that they're going to have to deal with a generation that has never bought in, right? Bought into the lie that you're going to kind of live better than your parents and so on. It's because, Gen X, my generation, we watch things die. Right. We watch the factories leave. We watch the kind of jobs disappear. We watch our parents lose their jobs. Right. We saw the economy in decline. Right. But we were a smaller generation. My millennials come around. Right. And they're kind of growing up in the aftermath of that, when you're kind of your best job is what? Freaking you're going to be a delivery guy for, multiple restaurants and get paid to chump change. Right. Or you're going to be kind of a woman who's going to try to piece together three, four different jobs while you're kind of also kind of dealing with, your own kid at home. I mean, that's the reality of a lot of, we see this new generation. So I think that there's a certain kind of militancy that has always been there as part of the environmental justice movement. Don't get me wrong, but at a mass scale that I haven't seen before. So in some ways, it seems like a hopeful time moving forward. So I'm curious about what you're thinking about where we go from here and how we see the kind of the generation of activists that have kind of come up through, you know, the folks that you've been working with for as long as I've known you and before then, and then see this new generation coming forward. Are you as hopeful as I am about this, or?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think Sunrise Movement has been amazing. The way that they've gone about what they do. Again, it's very electoral in nature, but there's so many other things happening too. That's just one huge movement that was very effective at getting no fossil fuel pledges signed and things like that. I mean, I just think I meet young people now and I wonder how I didn't manage to be so smart when I was their age. You know, I really feel like it took me until like maybe 50 or something to get a clue, you know, where they seem to be on it and so much smarter and so much more, like you said, observant about, you know, what kind of future, you know, is in store for them.
Right.
I mean, and economically as well as in terms of climate change and all of that. So it seems like I really feel like I can't think of a movement that didn't rely on young people, where young people did not play a critical role. I just really can't think of one. And so I think it's so great that there are so many people who are making better choices for their lives. It's not just getting involved. I know so many people who are thinking about the foods that they eat and you know, and the way that they live, lifestyle things that nobody thought about when I was their age. Nobody did. And
yep.
So it's just so, it's so refreshing to see an entire generation, and I think it's generation after generation now, that's just so more attuned to everything and knows that it needs to be, part of civic life. You know, that I think one of the things that busyness has done to us, it's made us forget how to be citizens because we're just so busy trying to survive. And I think the refreshing thing about younger people, even though they know that they have to work like crazy too, especially now,
right.
But I think they just realize that there's a role to play that is a requirement on their part to be a participant in a way that we didn't do that. You know, we just sort of just accepted our lot and kind of, because we were kind of going down with it. We were sort of circling the drain with everybody else, you know. Now, you know, they know that that's just not going to work. They need to be participants. They need to take over. And I think it's fantastic. And I think, I'm just so heartened by it. You know, we've always had strong affiliations with the faith community. A lot of the key players, in other words, in movements over time are there. And now seeing young people coming into it, especially in these last 4 years, it's just been heartening, because I think it's the way forward. It's the only way forward. People like me, you know, I'm going to be 65. What use am I? I'm not going to be around long enough to live through the worst of this stuff. These people are the key people who are going to own all this mess that we're leaving them. And so I'm glad that they're willing to, you know, to be there and to work shoulder to shoulder with the people who made the problem for them in the first place.
Well, and I tell you, and I say this all the time, is like, you know, for me too, as well, it's like, I can't tell you absolutely like how heartening it is. And, you know, I mean, I find myself more than often, you know, looking for ways that I can kind of like help rather than, you know, and this is one of the things that always frustrated me about, you know, a certain set of leadership that came out of the kind of, you know, kind of baby boomers and stuff, right? Where is like, again, folks that are kind of at the head of the NGOs, ahead of kind of like, who always kind of knew better than everybody else. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that was more interested in kind of holding on to their own power than they were about actually expanding organization and things like this. And I think, you know, I mean, I know I've seen you, as long as I've known you, you've always been working with young folks, you know, always been, you know, one way or another. And I know that, like, to be in a moment where I'm saying, like, this is awesome. How can I help? But not like in a naive way, like, oh, you're going to tell me what to do. I can help support you. I can help here. Here's some resources. Here's these kind of things that I offer. And it breathes new energy, like certainly into me, to feel like, you know, God, finally, we're at a point where we have an opportunity to really turn a corner. And in a way that can, you know, not just kind of save us from the worst in you know, climate destruction, but also begin, you know, some significant, for real, addressing white supremacy, right? Addressing the kind of like crazy kinds of inequality and runaway capitalism. Right across the board, addressing the kind of the deep-seated patriarchy that has infected kind of our culture, especially Western culture, for so long. To see all these happening at the same time is amazing.
Well, I think it's one of the interesting things about the environmental justice movement is that 1982 and what happened in Warren County, and this is environmental racism, you know, and that sort of official beginning of the environmental justice movement is what we think of. But it was actually in the 60s with Chavez and farm workers. Part of what they were fighting was exposure to pesticides. Yep. And so if there is a, I think, a better, you know, corollary to what's going on now, where it is all of these issues coming together. And it is that intersection of all of these issues. Or as Nizhmi Drenko from the Poor People's Campaign of Pennsylvania, Put People First, you know, she prefers interconnectedness, because intersections are one point, but there's actually lots of ways in which we're connected to one another, interconnected. So I like the way she thinks about it. But, you know, there are so many different ways in which we are connected. Are all of our issues, they're all the same thing in the end. They're all one issue. And so, and, you know, there are so many ways of seeing that. You know, I mean, some of the immigration detention centers down in Texas are sitting in the middle of fracked communities.
Exactly.
So those people are literally captive to whatever pollution is there. They really have no choice, and they did nothing other than try to, you know, be refugees to end up there. You know, so, I mean, there's just one of God knows how many intersections we could talk about. But that's the idea. That there's just so many points at which we are intersecting or interconnecting with one another that I think it's that's the way we have to approach it. Because, again, going back to Naomi Klein, this changes everything. Everything is everything.
Bingo. Absolutely. Well, if you have any kind of like burning question, burning thought, burning kind of idea, you want to get it in now, because we're kind of closing up on towards the end of the show here. So don't hesitate to jump in. We'll be happy to take it. But so Karen, what's let me ask you to say two questions as a way to kind of close it out tonight. Is like first of all, is like, where are you going from here? Right. I mean, what do you got from, you know, from how you're approaching this? You've got the campaign that launched today. You're out there. What's the next steps that you've got to take? And then secondly, you know, if people want more information, want more ways to get connected, we've already talked about this. You can send me some stuff. I'll put things in the show notes. But, you know, if your people listening right now, they're looking for something to kind of click on or some place to go to, where can they go to get more information to?
Yeah, they can go to betterpathcoalition.org. They can check us out on Facebook and Twitter. We have really active accounts in both of those places. You know, they can always contact me. I'm also on Facebook. You know, just, you know, we can connect you with anybody you're interested in working with. If you heard about something, one of the projects that appeals to you, and there's so many more we didn't even touch on tonight. And so I think, you know, there's, again, there are so many projects right now, but I think the next step for the Better Path Coalition, one is that in May, we're going to be celebrating the 50th anniversary of Article 1, Section 27 of our Constitution. Pennsylvania is only one of two states that has an environmental rights amendment, and ours is the stronger of the two. And so we have a rare protection in Pennsylvania that is not being taken seriously enough. And so we've always incorporated that into what we talk about. That certainly pertains here. You know, why do we have environmental rights that are being ignored? It's an Article 1, you know, amendment. It's a Bill of Rights amendment, which is on par with, you know, due process and freedom of speech. Why do courts take it seriously now, after many years of them not even taking it seriously? But why don't the people on the front end of these policies and these laws and regulations take it seriously? So that's one thing. We're going to be talking to the guy who wrote Article 1, Section 27 in a legislative briefing we're also planning. So I can share some of those dates with you if there are things, you know, any of your listeners who are interested in participating in those things, because we do a weekly, or pardon me, a monthly webinar called Better Paths Presents, and that's where we bring up a lot of these subjects. But then the other thing is, again, you know, continuing with this We Are the Ones campaign and extending it, because the next chapter in it goes back to something I did talk about earlier, and that's how we are not protected in the Delaware River Basin if they're going to continue to not even consider those regulations I talked about earlier on, but continue to build pipelines like the Mariner East Pipeline, Penn East Pipeline, Adelphia Gateway, the LNG facility they're talking about up in Wyalusing that would put liquefied natural gas on trucks and bomb trains and, I mean, have them drive through our communities in the river basin. I mean, you're kidding yourselves. It was the same commission that voted to allow the second dock to be built in Gibbstown, New Jersey, where all that stuff would be exported in December of last year. And then in February, they banned fracking. I mean, where's the logic? It's all the same problem. So, you know, so I think what we have to start doing is pointing out, you know, we're not protected either. And so it's great that you banned fracking, but there's so much more that needs to be done. And all of it ends up impacting people in fact, communities, because whatever we're dragging through here or burning here in the power plant, it comes from a place in Pennsylvania where people are being shafted and they are being harmed and some of them are dying. And that's just got to be acknowledged once and for all, and it's got to be acted on.
Whoop, whoop, co-sign everything right there. So this is like, I mean, absolutely. Well, this is, you know, this is my excuse once again, and you made the mistake of bringing up the fact that we've got an anniversary of that amendment coming up, which just means that I'm going to be bugging you to come back on the show, maybe some folks with a better path, to talk about maybe that amendment and kind of broaden out these discussions. It's just, you know, I mean, this is like absolutely phenomenal stuff, Karen. I just like, and it's always, for me, I'm always reinvigorated when I talk to you about these things. I'm always learning stuff. And, you know, I'm just kind of reminded once again that there's always so many awesome people out there doing this great work. So, I mean, I appreciate your time tonight.
Well, I always appreciate hearing you when I'm not on and talking to you when I am, because you're so well informed on this. I mean, it's really refreshing to talk to people who are paying attention to the issue, and you stand out in that way. I really appreciate that.
Oh, Karen, I appreciate that. I mean, I try, believe me, I'm pulled in a thousand other directions. You know what I'm saying?
I know.
And it's like, but you know, I look at it like this is, you know, one, you know, I think about, I mean, that's what got me into higher education. I mean, you know, everybody who's, you know, who doesn't know me personally, you know, I teach at Kutztown University, and you know, all these issues come together is what matters to me most. I mean, I always work with social movements, and you know, I've got two young kids, and I look at, you know, the work I do now is going to be their legacy too as well. So that kind of like, yeah, you know, I find it's required. And then, you know, then I moved to Pennsylvania and I'm fine. Like, I'm in, like, you know, in the belly of the beast in so many ways. I mean, we're sending people to the insurrection. We're at the center of fracking, you know, it's like, so in some ways, you know, I figure that I landed in the right place, even if it can be incredibly stressful at times. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
For sure, stressful here. We saw Doug Mastriano at the Capitol today, and the guy.
Oh, Jesus!
Said, hey, insurrectionist.
Yeah, exactly. Hello, Mr. Insurrectionist. Exactly. Well, you know, I'm thrilled, and I you know, I hope you'll come back on the show soon. I'll throw you some out. And we got, you know, and I'm looking at this, and I always think about this. This is my message to, you know, I'll leave everybody with this kind of notion is, you know, I know I bug everybody when I always, you know, let you know you can help support the show. You become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Go to patreon.com/rcpress. You can leave us kind of, you know, a little kind of golden beans here in the Podbean app if you're listening here, or for that matter, if you're over on our Facebook page, you can go over and kind of hit us up our Facebook page or at our YouTube channel, and you go to paypal.me/rcpress. You can leave us a one-time donation. I mean, there's lots of ways. And the reason why, I mean, I imagine this is like, you know, again, I'll leave with what kind of my imagined future here is like. There is so much stuff that's going on. The fact that, you know, that right now I can do this show on Monday nights and I could do another show with Sean as a news wrap up on Friday, when there's so much else that needs to have attention. I mean, I could probably talk with Karen and stuff what's going on with the Better Path Coalition like every day this week, and we still wouldn't cover everything that's going on. So again, I want to appreciate all the support everybody's always kind of shown us on this show. People that have been there right from the beginning. I'll make that plug again. So you want more of this, you want more of this content, you want more progressive media, you want to see this kind of grow out, you want to bring more people into the fold and help amplify the messages and the work of people all, you know, that are doing the good work on the ground. Help us support the show by going to patreon.com/rcpress. You become a patron as little as $5 a month. I can't tell you how much that helps out. But Karen, always a pleasure, and you know, I thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and you know, listen to what he said. Go help him out. Support media like this. We need this kind of help. We need people telling these stories for us and giving us a forum to talk about things. So thank you so much, Kevin.
Oh, you got it. I'm going to cut that and put that in an ad. But and so I want to remind everybody before I go, there's one thing. Next week on the show, we're going to have Jamie Martin. She's the president of ABSCUF, the faculty union, which I'm part of. And we're going to be talking about what's going on with the state system of higher education. And in 2 weeks, we are going to have the directors for Invisible Hand. That is Melissa Troutman and Joshua Probanek. They're going to be coming on talking about their Rights of Nature film. It's really a spectacular film. It's beautiful, and it's the kind of one that actually it begins to bring it all into focus about seeing a different kind of future. And especially, I especially appreciate, I don't want to kind of like tip my hand too much here, but especially appreciate the ways that we're seeing the kind of the coming together once again of, you know, this kind of movement coupled with kind of indigenous knowledges and ways of thought, which is actually spectacular in that film. So we've got some great shows that are coming up. And then we've got some folks that are going to be coming on talking about college debt. And I don't mean just kind of student debt. I mean, yes, student debt, but also the kind of the debt that public college universities are in. That's going to be coming down towards the end of May or middle of May. So we've got lots of stuff coming up here. We've got some surprise shows that are coming up that I'm not, like I said at the beginning of the show, I'm not going to tip my hand on yet. But we got some good stuff coming up for you. So anything that you can do to help support the show, patreon.com/RC Press, become a member for as little as $5 a month. Karen, have a great night. And, you know, here's to the fight. You know, it's like, here's to the fight and the joy that comes along with doing that fight collectively.
Hear, hear. It's nothing like it. Once you're in it, I don't know why people go to the mall.
There you go. Close on that. See ya.
Thank you.